From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Welcome back to Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. Your sideways look at the news, with some little bits of news in it as well. With me, Eric Wiltshire, Lee Banks, and Mark Gender, trying to keep us both in order this week.
I'm just wondering how some news slipped in. That was a mistake.
Well, it was rather, wasn't it? There was some news in there. That was a flipping poor marvellous. Anyway, one of the big stories this week, of course, was Osama bin Laden.
One of the big stories this week.
Well, I'll tell you, it's lucky that bin Laden just missed the wedding, because what had happened if there had been this attack on the bin Laden estate?
Why? Did you say, was he flying in? Is that another exclusive you've got?
That's right, he wouldn't have been able to attend. But no, what would they have done with the two stories then? I mean, I actually wondered whether Obama, the United States, actually maybe held off to let the wedding go ahead before moving in. But that's
I don't think you're alone on that thought, Mark.
I don't think you are at all, because also, if you think, there are three elements to a royal wedding that have always been there. There's the procession to the church, there's the wedding itself, and then there's the waving off of the couple as they go on honeymoon, which is the metaphorical closing of the bedroom door.
Right.
And they didn't go on honeymoon either. And nobody understood why. And obviously this was all known, exactly what was going to happen.
Allegedly.
Maybe they were advised not to.
Even allegedly, yeah. Eric. Maybe. I'd just say it was known. No. I can't see why they wouldn't know. The only people who didn't know about it were the Pakistanis.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's very true. So anyway, do we reckon that he's actually been buried now then?
Yes. I've got to say this, ladies and gentlemen, I hold my hands up for the red tops. This was the headline of the world as bin Laden was dropped in the sea to his grave beneath the waves. It was the Sun in Britain, and they had it. I'd have forgotten it.
Bin bag.
Yeah, bin bags.
Oh, dear. Well,
I have no idea. I think the whole thing with bin Laden, the whole setup here, is terrifyingly complex.
It is.
And frighteningly avoiding the basic rules of human rights and the basic laws of most of the lands of this world.
Hold on a minute.
Well, I have to say, to a certain extent, I've got no time for the laws in that way, because, I mean, they're agreed by the sort of the powerful parties in the world. And, you know, particularly when we come to the business, for instance, of going in to protect people from despotic atrocities as they are in North Africa. I think that maybe there's a new kind of law that comes in. But what made me feel very sorry about this bin Laden story was not the fact that he died, but actually seeing the celebrations and the jubilation. Which basically, you know, fated the death of one man. And I thought, in terms of fating the death of a man, I was very sorry about it. I thought, what have we been brought to by Al-Qaeda?
Don't you think that's closure?
I'm not sure there were a lot of people celebrating when Hitler died?
Because I think when Hitler died, that we really saw the end to the conflict. And I don't think that that's at all.
This won't bring the end to the conflict.
No. And I think the death of Hitler symbolised the end of conflict. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't forget that, although people hated Hitler, most people, for instance, in England and Wales, in fact, I think most of the ordinary public never recognised him as being the person who was committing and facilitating all of these atrocities. Nowadays, he's reviled, really, because of the treatment of Jews and these, you know, ridiculous sort of ethnic conflicts that people never understood. I think that when Hitler died...
Mark, and talking to people that were here in World War II.
Well, they were right on their doorsteps, absolutely. I quite agree. But I think that probably the Allies and the public in the Allies probably saw it as the end of conflict. And that was a reason to celebrate. This, I don't know, I'm not displeased that he's gone. But I was sorry to see, you know, the sort of the cheering and the fating, for instance, in New York and what have you. Although I can understand why it happens.
He said there was a good point going back to the Sun with its bin bagged headline. The strap lines underneath were bin Laden, unarmed and unprotected. Mm-hmm. And which is fine, that's exactly what happened to him. But it also said, just like his 3,000 victims.
Yeah, right.
And all the other victims. My point about bin Laden is very simple. I think that in reality, for a country like America, the most powerful nation in the world, really, to illegally enter another country to kidnap somebody who's living there and then shoot him in the head is questionable and wrong.
So he did it first?
Well, it does. Two wrongs don't make a right, Eric. That's the basic law of life.
I
agree. We should have killed him.
Yes,
but it's the way it was done.
Well, no. In fact, I can vividly remember this sitting in my office in London, taking a call because I'd emailed a gentleman called Steve. He'll stay as Steve in New York, and we were working on a massive project at the time, and he was one of the financiers of it. And I said to him, Steve, how are you doing? Are you all right? And he was as flat as hell, and I felt it. And it was the day after we watched the planes going to the Twin Towers, which also reminds me of what my daughter said to me at the time because she was younger. And she said, Daddy, we're not going to have another world war, are we? And I think
people were very frightened at the time. Yeah,
I think it was very poignant. Point is that Steve's niece was in the Twin Towers and he broke down trying to tell me that he'd spoken to her on the phone. Until such a point where the phone just died, and that was seconds before the towers collapsed.
And he escaped, did he?
He was outside. He was trying to console his niece, who was inside of the building, knowing full well that she was going to die.
I agree with you, and it's a tragic story.
It's just wrong.
And you can't... Yeah, but it doesn't mean that they should have... There are two reasons Bin Laden feasibly should not have been shot. A, because of the legal requirements, and B, well, there's three actually. B, because they were in a country illegally doing this, and C, for one very simple reason, they had the man who was classed as the world's greatest terrorist there in their hands. He had a lot of information that he wasn't.
They've got a lot of that as well. And the truth is, why take
Saddam to trial? Why not just shoot Saddam while he's poking his head up like a monkey out of his hole?
I mean, if they'd captured Bin Laden, there would have been so much scrutiny. I mean, I don't think they could have even started to talk about waterboarding him or anything.
No,
I mean, I don't imagine that there would be any information available. I mean, he would have just...
Stop waterboarding.
I think Bin Laden had a simple solution to all this. He'd never done it in the first place and he wouldn't have been in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. But there is also... Can I just run this little...
not too long.
...conspiracy theory before you, because it's perfectly true. When the Twin Towers were blown up, I was working, I'm not sure who it was, but it was like the AP or something like that. And we did a story, which is there, still chronicled now, so there's no problem with it, that George Bush, after 9/11 had happened, flew Bin Laden's family out of America to avoid any reprisals against them, against his family.
But they'd already disowned him at that point.
It doesn't make any difference. Flew them out. But for one simple reason, because they had a massive oil deal. Bush's family and...
Chronicled that at that point they cut his money off. He wasn't getting any money from the family, and it's well known. Yeah. And so I don't see a problem with that because, you know, it's like every family can have a bad apple. It doesn't mean to say the family's bad.
Yeah, but if it was your child who was doing something as horrendous as Bin Laden, right? Do you really think that this government would fly you out of the country to a safe place? No, they wouldn't. They'd have you arrested. They'd be doing everything they could for you to get information out of you. They didn't. They didn't do that with his family.
Okay.
They let them go. And then Bin Laden apparently gets shot in a room in the middle of nowhere where nobody can see it apart from some other people who got shot and his wife who got shot in the leg.
Well,
then immediately
there's one thing that we can all agree on. The whole thing will never come out as a full entity, not even with WikiLeaks.
Which is terrible.
And is therefore terrible. We're all just wittering on not knowing the facts behind it, and that's the trouble.
You create with this kind of action.
So therefore we'll move on. Gordon, you are going to be happy now because we come into tech news just for Gordon. Officially, this is Gordon's news. Apple,
do it for Gordon.
We mentioned this a couple of weeks back. Apple had a bit of a scare created by some unknowns, and therefore they have released a software update for the iPhone and iPad, which was keeping locations Well, just inside the phone. The logic being that it had a database of Wi-Fi hotspots and mobile phones around you and so on and so forth, so that the phone could actually switch between the two, which is what it does. Mm. But anyway, there was lots of whinges and moans about it, and my privacy's been damaged and all sorts of other stuff like that, which has resulted in the fact that later this month, Apple and Google are due to testify at a US Senate hearing on mobile privacy, because they're being scrutinized like mad, and they're under incredible amounts of pressure to reveal how they collect and store location data. But I go back to the point I made a couple of weeks ago. In the contract, it says we will store the data on there because it helps you get a better experience. End of result. End
That's
of story.
The problem, isn't it? Because there's no choice on that contract then. Well, you, so that, yes, that is a contract to allow people to have your information. Maybe you don't want you them, don't, but you want to you be able like to use modern technology.
If you don't like, well, you can. If you don't like the contract with Ford, buy a Vauxhall. Simple, or an Opel here, or a Skoda, or something else. You don't have to.
As a listener, top tip: should we tell them then what? To do that?
If you don't like the contract, go to another supplier, and you can. Because applications are so widely spread between the Android platform and the iPhone platform these days, you can do the same on both. I mean, I have a Nokia, which is a smartphone, so I can monitor websites on it as much as I have an iPhone to do it on, so I can look at both.
Is it an N8?
No, I haven't gone that far yet. That's nice.
Gordon, I'm sorry.
I got rid of mine.
This is what happens.
Yeah. Stop it.
Have you got an N8, Gordon? I haven't.
I knew that was coming.
I'm innately.
Yeah, very, very innate. he's in the middle. Anyway, this week, none other than Mark Gander of RTI fame, but more so the Consumer Action Group, was on the BBC because Lloyds have lost their case, and they didn't have a condom on at the right time, so therefore they're going to be in huge amounts of giving it away now, aren't they, Mark?
That was such a cheap park, Eric.
Well, yes, I mean, how amazing. The banks have been caught with their hands in their customers' pockets again, using loan products as a Trojan horse to sell PPI insurance.
Which is payment protection insurance.
Exactly, yeah. And it's meant to cover you in case you're unemployed or you're sick or something like that. An awful lot of people ended up being sold these products or have them foisted on them, even though they were already unemployed or they were already sick or they were self-employed. In other words, they were uninsurable. And in fact, there were lots of other ways in which people were missold. There's been a big court case about it because the regulatory authorities said that the banks have got to volunteer the money back, and the banks didn't want to do that. And now the courts have said, well, no, you have to start acting fairly. Amazing. That's a first for the banks. And to start offering the money back. And, of course, Lloyds finally decided they wouldn't appeal, so they say they've accepted the decision. They've set aside a massive £3.5 billion to repay the money, the missold money to their to the customers or to their victims, if you want. And I have to say, I mean, I nearly cried. My heart bled when apparently Lloyds said it's going to cost us a lot of money. It's not going to cost them a lot of money at all. They've taken the money. It's money they shouldn't have had. So I don't really see how it's going to cost them a lot of money or how they can start bleating about it.
I have quite a serious question on that as well. It might not sound serious, but it is quite serious. Surely an organisation like Lloyds, when they have when they're selling these policies, this payment protection thing, surely Lloyds would have taken out some insurance themselves against something like this happening to them.
Well, the other thing is, and Mark can answer the two bits at once if we could, once they've got this money into the bank, Mark, surely they invest it to get a profit of the investment, so they're making money out of this money that they've had for a couple of years on people.
You're absolutely dead right. In fact, you said I was on the BBC. I was quite honoured to be asked to write an article at BBC about how to go ahead and collect to collecting your refund, to collecting your PPI. And one of the things I try to emphasize is what your losses actually are, because people might have lost their PPI premiums because they've been paying them. And as a result, they may have been unable to service their mortgages. They might have lost their homes. They might have been put down on the credit register as a bad debtor simply because they'd been conned into getting this money. And exactly as you've just said, on the other hand, the banks have been lending their money out, this missold money, out at maybe 19-20%. And I think it's that the banks ought to be asked to repay. In other words, they ought to be asked to get rid of or to unpocket all of the benefits they've had and to give that back to the
country.
Where are
you? Quite rightly, or in fact, give it back to the country. They never will be asked to do that. And of course,
Hang on a minute here. If it is that a consumer has suffered at the hands of this, whereby they've had damaged credit ratings, they've had letters from solicitors and where they've been charged for it, or banks have charged them for it, etc., etc., are they getting that money back as well, or just the basic PPI?
Well, this is the basic PPI, and they've got to sue for the rest, haven't they? They've got to sue.
That's exactly right. And I mean, the ombudsman who actually complained about some of the aspects of the article that I wrote and wanted some amendments. They although on their website they say that they try to make sure that all the losses have been compensated for and that there's a fair result. Actually, all they order is the refund of the payments plus 8%, which is what somebody would normally expect to get in a court as the very sort of minimal payout anyway. And it's just really not satisfactory. The mess that's been caused by bank greed is huge and impossible to unravel. It's so complicated.
Mm. Can I just make a point here of an example of this? It happened to me, in reality. It happened to millions of people. It's not just me. But was over having an endowment policy to cover my mortgage.
Yes.
And that ultimately was proved to be missold to me. And it had taken me, God knows how long, probably 5 years in total. Not saying I was fighting it all the time, but over a five-year period, I fought them over it and ultimately won. Now, the shortfall on my mortgage was going to be, or is going to be, anything from $15,000 to $40,000. Mm-hmm. Because I'd won, right, and proved that they missold me the policy, that it was all wrong, I got compensation. Do you know how much I got?
Mm-hmm.
$5,000.
$5,000?
Got $5,000. That was a really good win as well. But that doesn't cover the minimum of $10,000 that I'm going to be short, or the $35,000 that I've still got a shortfall of.
Sure.
That they told me, they convinced me, and the only reason I took it on, like millions of other people, was because they said it'll pay your mortgage off, and it'll put some money in your pocket as well, Duck, for your retirement.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, my advice to people is, if they can get a result, if they happen to get a result from the ombudsman, which basically establishes the principle that the PPI was missold, or the policy was missold, I would then go straight to the county court with that decision in my hand, and ask for a sensible level of compensation. I don't think there's any difficulty about opening up the case again. The ombudsman is not legally binding, and in fact the banks normally pay out as a gesture of goodwill anyway. The banks really don't get it. I mean, this practice of them paying things out goodwill, they're the ones who need goodwill from their customers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct.
Absolutely, you know, Mark.
It's really distorted, quite perverted, that it should
Just do another top tip here? On what you're saying, Mark, it's just something that's just crossed my mind as you were speaking. You saying, right, go to the county court and go for a reasonable compensation.
Absolutely.
Do it this way. I'm not going to go into this at all because we can't at the moment, but Eric is aware that I am taking on something absolutely gigantic, right? Really as big as the government.
That's very, very true. Very true.
Yeah. I am fighting them really hard, and it suddenly struck me, you know, I it will ultimately reach a point where I will need proper legal advice.
Yes.
And you know what I'm going to do?
Go on.
I'm going to go for no win, no fee.
Yes.
Well,
and people can do that on what you're talking about. Go for no, it might cost you at the end of the day, it might cost a bit, but usually the no fee places take their fee off the people who lose.
Well, I'm afraid on the Consumer Action Group, we tend to advise people to be very, very cautious about that. We don't hear very much good about these kind of schemes.
Why?
Particularly if they're carried out by claims management companies, because no win, no fee basically tends to mean that you give your case to somebody who really just wants to get it settled as quickly as possible and get their money in. And they don't necessarily force it right to the end. And you'll find, in fact, that in the small print, you give them an enormous amount of discretion to decide when enough is enough. You know, and you may end up, instead of your $5,000, you may end up getting $6,000. And they'll say, well, we think this is all we have to do reasonably under the contract. And you'll be angry. And you'll then find that you'll have to part, you know, even though there's no win, no fee, you may well still have to pay them some kind of winning percentage. It's very difficult. It's not clear cut, Lee.
He said, no, it's a good point. It's a good point. I don't look at it. I suppose I, in my position, I don't get frightened of things like that because I've been around enough to be able to stop it and know up front whether it's going to cause a problem.
Yeah, but that's the difference between the people that go...
That's it. Mark says is fine is
not
real.
Not being disrespectful to people that go on the Consumer Action Group. One of the reasons they go on there is because they haven't got that sort of cast iron stone of a heart that you've got and probably have not had to do
that. I have an angry soul.
Yes, we know that.
It's the anger that pushes it forward. And I have to say, I mean, it damages your karma. And
I'm loving Mark this week, you know. He's gorgeous, man. Saying things like that, it's the anger that pushes it. Oh.
Well, I mean, that's what I tell you. If you don't have the anger, there's no other way to deal with these huge companies that have got limitless resources and absolutely no sense of the damage they're doing. It's anger that drives you, and it's anger that eventually, produces a victory over them. And if you haven't got that...
Oh, it gives you a heart attack.
Exactly that. You're likely to lose.
Yeah, can I just put a caveat to that one as well? Yeah. Do make sure that, not just with the banks, with anything that's going on, make sure that if you have a dispute with, I don't know, your neighbours or the restaurant down the road or the car shop down the road or whatever, make sure you've got it right before you start whinging. The bank's thing with the FSO is a cut and drawn case. It's not an issue. But where you've got a dispute between a company and you or something, make sure you actually heard what was being offered. And I've seen that so many times in technology where people go, oh, but it doesn't work. Well, no, that's because you ordered the wrong ruddy thing, so shut up. And I think you have to balance that a little bit, Mark. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree, but I mean, that's what web communities, I mean, the Consumer Action Group is one, there are one or two other good ones. That's where you can go and you can discuss it and you can reflect and you can get a real sense of what you should be entitled to and what you can get. I think that's worth an enormous amount, that kind of community.
I think it is. Yeah, I think what you're saying is right.
Okay, let's move on to a couple of sillies towards the end. Well, one very serious, actually, as we run towards the end of the programme, not having done anything. A 50-foot woman has been found mummified in Beverly Hills.
I know, and guess who it is.
Who is
50
it?
50-foot?
50-foot.
50-foot woman found mummified in Beverly Hills. Doesn't happen every day. And she was a B-movie actress.
I don't understand 50 foot.
No, I don't. Well, is she in the Guinness Book of Records as 50 foot tall?
She was in a film called Attack of the 50 Foot Woman.
Oh, right.
Woman in the film. Oh. So the 50 foot woman has died in Beverly Hills, and she's been laying there for so long. It's a tragedy, really, that she'd become mummified. She was called Yvette Vickers. Most people all know her. They say that she could have been lying.
Know her.
The 50-foot woman.
I've never heard of it.
No.
Yeah, I've never heard of the Attack of the Giant Leeches.
No.
Oh, never. You're such a philistine. Honestly, Eric. Look, there's somebody else phoning me now.
just to remind you that they haven't heard of the blinking film either. I do want to say that this next particular story we're going to cover is very serious, and I have to take my hat off to the young lad that's done this. Drew is, Adrian Reed, from Kansas City in USA, was diagnosed with a very acute version of leukemia last year, which means he's going to cost an awful lot of money to get the treatment that he wants.
Terribly sad.
Yeah, and the little boy has drawn 3,000 monster pictures to pay for his cancer treatment and has been selling them. And the total sales so far are more than $30,000.
When do you think that's... How much is that a picture? £10 a picture.
Yeah, £10, roughly yeah. Ballpark. So I'm just going to urge everybody who's listening in the US, especially on Talk Radio X, if you find out about this young man, please, that's Aidan Reed, he's from Kansas City, USA, do please support him. It's just a wonderful thing to do, and it's just amazing what he's done, and it also proves that some of us old folk are a bit lazy when it comes to sorting your own lives out. So I think there's a couple of good messages that we can learn from young Aidan. So
I think this lad. Sorry, Eric, I interrupted.
I was going to say our love and thoughts and prayers are with you and the family, and I have got so much respect for this young lad. He's marvellous, yeah. Conley.
I think he's going to be in the future, and when he grows up, he should be one of the world's greatest businessmen. To sit there and decide that he's going to find a way at his age. Yeah, 5 years old, that he is going to pay for his own treatment to beat cancer. That kid is phenomenal. And I personally, I'm going to send some money off and get a picture. Maybe we should do that after all of us.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. What a blinking good idea. Let's move along to and take the programme down to its normal level, the toilet. Yeah. Apparently, a sex starved wife.
Oh, no, yeah.
He's suing her ex-husband for more than £7 million because he failed to do ladies and gentlemen's in the bedroom.
You know what strikes me with this story right away?
Go on.
If she's charging him £7 million for not having sex, how much would she have charged him if he had?
Well, that's true. That's very true. But he allegedly...
Well, can I say that I mean, now that we've brought this up, and I mean, I have to refer to
brought this up.
I have to refer to Lee, because Lee recently announced that he didn't come into journalism to stop journalists, and I have to say that I'm aware now, and I'm allowed to talk about it, about a super injunction which was in place to prevent Lee from admitting that that he had caused mental anguish to somebody by overwhelming them, and they're also after him for
it was actually underwhelming because I was underneath.
Well, I had to say, really, is that mental anguish could be working. This is falling flat. I'm going to shut up.
I thought you were doing all right there for a minute.
Actually, it's quite interesting.
Oh, dear.
Frightened by Lee. There we are.
Indeed so. That's about it from us, really.
We're finished.
Yeah, we're afraid so. We have. We've got to say goodbye.
Well, I think Lee has a right of reply.
Does he?
What have we got to reply to?
Because you're the bloke that whinges all about these sort of gagging orders and stuff like that, and yet you've taken out one to lay underneath a girl.
That's right. You can't make them gag.
Oh, my word. How the heck do we get away with it? I really don't know. Time to say goodbye from France, Mark.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Bye. from Lee.
Oh, I'm laughing. Go. I'm sorry. I've been in such a bad mood.
Are you going to say goodbye then, or what?
I just said it. You talked over it.
Did I?
Yeah. Bye bye, everybody. Thank you.
I suppose I better say Dovidenia then. That's it from Postcard from Pop Brad, from Eric Wiltshire, Lee Banks and Mark Gander. We'll be back in the same place, same channel next week. Don't forget you can get in touch with us via Facebook, as many of you are doing. Just type in radio, because that's our page on there, or get hold of us via your local radio station. No problem at all. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye now.
From the heart of Europe to the world, this is RTI.